in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce. The Strawberry Fields Cafe, looking out on Springfield Avenue, features expanded seating for the deli and coffee bar.
A recent poll found that a majority of employed adults believe that their mother could do just as well or better than their current chief executives. Three-fourths of those surveyed thought their mothers would be better or at least as capable at communicating with employees as their CEOs. Two-thirds thought mom would be just as good or better at resolving employee disputes, and almost two-thirds thought she could handle company finances just as well or better. 80% thought their mothers could teach CEOs a thing or two about ethics. My name is Maeve Riley, and this is the Afternoon Magazine. Today we are joined by Ann Crittenden, author of If You've Raised Kids, You Can Manage Anything, Leadership Begins at Home. Ann Crittenden is an award-winning journalist and the author of three previous books, including The Price of Motherhood, a New York Times notable book of 2001. Nominated for the Pulitzer Prize, she has been a staff reporter and correspondent for Fortune, The New York Times, and has written for many other national publications, including The Nation, Foreign Affairs, McCall's, and Working Women. She lives with her husband in Washington, D.C., and has one son in college. You can join our conversation by calling 333-9455, that's 333-WILL, or toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Ann Crittenden, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm happy to do it.
Great. You're not saying that mom should necessarily jump right in and run the office, but you specifically cite four transferable skills that most parents mention as an aid to them in their careers and their family life.
Right.
And what are they?
Well, one is, of course, the one skill that everybody gives full-time parents credit for, and that's multitasking. The other is a set of people skills, interpersonal skills, sometimes called emotional intelligence. The third is the ability to mentor and bring out the best in people. And the fourth is what I call habits of integrity, a certain set of attitudes or outlooks that kind of keep parents honest, let's say.
Parents and their kids and employees, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and do all mothers have these or all parents have these?
Obviously not. I mean, we are really talking, I like to say, about people who conscientiously raise kids, not people who just have babies.
Okay.
And so, you know, some parents never learn much of anything, but I think what I'm trying to address is the fact that we really haven't given enough credit where credit is due, that good parents and conscientious parents have a lot of skills that really do cross over.
Right. And you focus a lot on mothers in your book.
I did, because they still are the people who do most of the hands-on child rearing. I did interview men for this book, and I was actively looking for guys who, my criteria were really people who've been very successful in various walks of life, who also had a lot of hands-on experience with children. And still at this stage, the people who meet those two criteria tend to be women.
That's right. And what's wrong with the business model today, and why does it need parental help?
Well, I don't know if it needs parental help, but I think it could certainly use it, and it would be enriched by it, and there would be more true diversity. And I do explain what I mean by that in the book, that you'd have, when you bring in new points of view, such as the experience of having worked in a family with family dynamics, you're bringing a whole new set of insights to the table, and it's like in agriculture when you mix two different hybrid. When you get a hybrid, you get what is called heterosis. That's a lot of hybrid vigor and fresh energy. And I think we do need to see more of that.
So you're not excluding other management models and saying this is the best.
No, but what's fascinating, and I do explain in this book, is that a lot of the best management advice and management gurus and management books and teachings really are very similar to what is people say would make effective parents. So it's this kind of enlightened parent model is kind of the current fashionable management model.
Okay. I don't know if you caught 60 Minutes this Sunday, but there was an article about someone who's writing a book about an NFL management model. And it seemed a little different from the parental management model in that the NFL coaches that he was basing this on are basically micromanagers. And I wonder if you could address that in terms of parental management skills.
Well, that's interesting. I think they should have this different point of view.
Right.
Because, the old models were always use the military analogy, use the sports analogy. And I'm saying it's time to use some of the parent analogies. And one thing that a lot of successful people told me was that micromanaging was very destructive and self-defeating, that you really can't bring the best out in people, or certainly what's unique and creative in people, if you micromanage them. And many parents said they'd learn to give their kids and their employees some leeway so they could find their own best way and find their own practices that suited them the best. And within limits, all good parents and good manners set limits and restraints, but they, within reasonable limits, let people find their own creative, their own excellence.
Right. And you talk about that in terms of parents, you know, like you said, setting limits. And
yeah. But then you let people make their own mistakes. If you don't let anybody ever make a mistake, that means they're not going very far. They're not really growing, because ultimately we really learn from our own mistakes.
That's right. That's what all parents tell their kids, I know. I would like to reintroduce you. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and we're talking with Ann Crittenden, author of If You've Raised Kids, You Can Manage Anything. You can join our conversation by calling 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, or toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And in writing this book, you talked to many women who have positions of power, CEOs, university presidents, and the like.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was really interesting that those who had become mothers in perhaps the last 30 years really believe that motherhood is an asset to their careers, while women prior to that time try to downplay motherhood or avoid mentioning it entirely because of the business models of the time.
Right. It turns out, it appears that younger women in positions of authority are more willing and able to acknowledge that they learned a lot from their kids, whereas the older women often had to be working in such a totally male-dominated environment, they had to act like one of the boys. And so they were a little bit, you know, they just didn't talk about this as much, and they weren't as willing to acknowledge it. So I think it reflects that we're more comfortable being ourselves and being authentic today.
And has the business model changed at all to allow that conversation to happen?
Well, as I said, what's fascinating to me is that what's being taught now in seminars and universities and management books and trainers is very much what I'm writing about, that sort of the enlightened parent, listen respectfully to people, seek win-win solutions to disputes, all these kinds of advice, is very common. However, you can see it violated every day,
right,
at the top of big organizations. So it's like everybody kind of knows this, except the managers of the top managers of some of the biggest corporations and government.
Well, I wondered if you could talk a little bit about each of those four skills that you mentioned, particularly, let's start with multitasking and how parents use that and how it can be applicable to the business place.
Well, first of all, when we talk about multitasking, it means a bunch of different things. Everybody thinks it means juggling 10 things at once, that's for sure. But think about it. That implies that you know you can't really do 10 things at once, so you have to prioritize. It means you're able to set priorities, decide what's really important and what needs tackling immediately and what can be put aside for a while. It means you can focus in the middle of amazing distractions and function in the middle of lots and lots of interruptions. And again, the classic study of what top managers really do in organizations sounds exactly like this. One book said that management work is characterized by brevity, fragmentation, and interruption. And so this is a skill that is totally needed if you're putting out fires and handling crises and difficult people in organizations. So that's one thing. The next thing I mentioned is the people skills. Here you have all that advice that is given out, like listening respectfully to others and they'll respond better. Negotiate. Don't try to crush people. Don't try to take all the chips off the table. Things of that sort. Working with people, how to spot an immature person when you see them.
Right, and that's an important skill.
It really is, and I think mothers are used to it. If somebody loses it in the office, they've been there. They've had to deal with that two-year-old tantrum or that teenage pout.
Right. Yeah. And what are some of the skills that you think parents bring to that they've got at home in dealing with that two-year-old or that teenager that they can use in the office?
Well, you learn to humor people or let people think they're getting their way when it's really you've set it up so that it's a way that you can live with.
Right.
Like if you're little child won't eat vegetables, you don't say, eat your vegetable. You say, honey, would you like carrots, spinach, or broccoli? And then sometimes they'll buy into one of those choices and they'll think it was their idea. And you can do the very same thing at work, giving people choices rather than commands, so that they feel part of, you know, the system. Or projects, you know they've got to do one or three projects, you let them choose which one, that kind of thing.
Right, and you also talked about picking your battles, too.
A lot of people talk about that, that when you're raising kids, many parents, how many of you heard say, I'm not going to fight over the hair, you know, it's their hair. But I will fight over good manners or ethics or safety issues. You know, you put up the battle over the helmet if they're out there riding a scooter or something. So that kind of thing. And I think the very same thing applies in business. A top lawyer was telling me she never, if a report was written one way rather than necessarily exactly her way, she learned not to put up a big issue of it, make it an issue. But if it was an issue of ethics, she would make a huge issue of it. So that's really what I mean there.
All right. And you also talk about, you know, listening as part of those skills. There's listening skills and...
Yeah. And that was the best comment I think I got on that was from former Texas Governor Ann Richards, who raised four kids before she went into politics. And she said the most important thing she learned was this listening to people. She said, I learned never to let anyone leave the table without feeling they'd been heard, which is great advice in no matter where you are.
And patience is another one that you mentioned, and I know as a parent myself, that's often, you know, when you're multitasking and doing other things, patience is kind of the hardest one to reach.
Very hard, but it's so important because, number one, particularly small children don't live on our time. Their time is timeless, you know. They don't count time the way we do. So you really have to learn to take a deep breath and sit there for a while and figure out what it is bothering them. And not rush them, and then you'll find out they all have a story. They're, you know, whatever it is bothering them is real to them. So patience is critical, and a lot of people said they learn not to rush to fix everything that arises in the office. Sit with the problem a while until it may work itself out, or listen to the problem, and you'll hear that the person has a solution. They just want you to hear about it, you know, hold your hand for a while maybe. Hold their hand.
Right. So along with that comes empathy, which I think, you know, particularly mothers, I would say, from my own experience, have plenty of empathy to go around. And how is that useful then in the marketplace?
Well, I think some of this boils down to being a nice, decent person, mm-hmm. respectful of others. And you can't imagine the loyalty or the productivity that might be generated if you just treat people like human beings. And I think too many bosses forget that. And so maybe too many parents, too, but people do respond if they feel they're being listened to or heard or sympathetic. You know, there's a sympathetic ear there. But I don't know. I just want to emphasize, too, that this isn't all about being touchy-feely and all kind and gentle all the time. One of my favorite stories was the mother who talked about the irrational no, the mm-hmm. power of the irrational no.
Right.
She had learned, she was an investment banker, had a three-year-old and a toddler, and the toddler was really being obstreperous the night before a major negotiation and just wouldn't do anything. You know, go to bed, no. Time to take your bath, no, you know, and so forth. And so this woman wakes up on the morning of her big day, just completely frazzled, irritable, and all that, goes into the negotiation, and everything the other side said, she said, no, absolutely not, no. We might as well end this right now, no. And that was her style. So finally, the other team called a timeout. They went out of the room, and she swears they came back and gave her all her major points. She said, that's when I understood the power of the irrational no.
It works sometimes.
Yeah.
I just want to reintroduce you. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and we're talking with Ann Crittenden, author of If You've Raised Kids, You Can Manage Anything. You can join our conversation by calling 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Or toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And you mentioned one of the stories you had from the governor, former governor of Texas. But I really enjoyed a lot of those stories and some of the anecdotes there. A lot of these women were very successful that you interviewed, and they transferred their skills wonderfully from work to family life. And my favorite has to be the Morella family, whose ironing basket never got ironed. And so finally the mother had that ironing basket there. And by the way, that basket has migrated to my house now. I have a similar basket.
Yeah. Yes.
But she just gave it away and no one noticed. And I thought that was wonderful.
She was a congresswoman from Maryland who was raising 9 kids.
Gosh.
Hers and her sister's, who had died of cancer. So the only way to survive was to get the kids to do the ironing and do, you know, a lot of the chores. And when they didn't do the ironing, she finally just said, well, to heck with it. And she took it all to Goodwill. And they never noticed.
That's great. And so, she said she had 4 D's that she liked to remember, right?
She said, don't do it if you don't have to. Dovetail it, of course. Try to do as many things at once. Delegate it, which would involve getting the kids involved, and then delay it. So delay it and don't it, I think, are pretty much the same. But she said that it all boils down to don't sweat the small stuff. You know, keep your eye on the big stuff.
That's right. And in the business world, too, that obviously applies.
Yeah, we don't have to have the perfect floor.
Right. And the other thing, one of the other, you know, more important skills you talked about, too, was growing human capabilities in terms of a
team. Yeah, I love that. That was a phrase from an engineer at Texas Instruments who runs a billion-dollar facility, has raised 3 kids. And she said, I just feel the main thing a parent carries over is the ability to mentor and bring the best out in people. And she said, you really should make the assumption that there's an innate drive in everyone to do their best. And if you appeal to that higher part of people. Parents do that. They say you can be the best you can, you know, be the best you can be. They appeal to that in children. And if a manager does the same, it can bring out really outstanding performance. And she, by the way, in the surveys I found of differences between men and women managers, it turns out there are not huge differences. However, the women do seem to excel at this quality of bringing out the best and inspiring people and motivating people. And I wonder if that might not stem from their experience of doing that with their families.
Well, you do cite that there might be perhaps biological or physiological reasons for mothers having, you know, a different ability to raise children differently than parents, even fathers that stay at home. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about
that. Well, I don't try to say too much genetically, except there is some new evidence coming up that when you're, and this is in rodents, I hasten to add, they're just beginning to study this in mammals and monkeys, but that when these animals are lactating, are pregnant or lactating or having to defend young, they do have changes. There are more measured neurons, you know, more connections in their brain. They do seem to get sharper, more alert. They get somewhat braver. They're more willing to take risks to find food because they've got to find that food for the young. And, you know, when you think about it, it makes sense that if we were getting dumber when we had children, then we would never survive past the Stone Age, you know. So I think it makes sense with human beings are so dependent for so long that the people in charge of protecting us must have been pretty savvy, pretty smart, pretty capable, or we'd still be back there with the Flintstones.
Yeah, and I'd want to get back on to one of the final major objective that you give to parents as having is a habit of integrity.
Yeah. Here I'm not trying to say, because it would be ridiculous, that parents have more integrity than other people. But they do have certain attitudes that I think stand them in very good stead. And one, for instance, habit of integrity is a sense of perspective. If you have children, you know that nothing that happens in the office is the end of the world. The end of the world is if something horrible happens to one of your children. So that gives you a certain cool-headedness, I think, in dealing with meltdowns in the office. You can always tell yourself, this is not the end of the world. So it gives you some balance, I think. And also, another quality that I call a habit of integrity is the awareness of the need to be there for people. Parents all say the most important thing they do for their children is to be there for them, and that they mean available if their kids really need them. They will jump, and their kids will come first. So I think leaders know that. Good leaders are very well aware that they're supposed to be there for their public. For instance, that's why presidents are always there at the hurricane site or the disaster scene. That's why Rudy Giuliani became a national name, because he was there after 9/11. He was on the scene. He went to all the funerals. And he performed that ultimate leadership role of saying, I'm there for you, for the city of New York. And so I think that's a parental, parents learn that, and they don't neglect to do that.
Well, you gave an interesting anecdote, too, about a woman who worked near the World Trade Center and her son who was in school near the World Trade Center when on September 11th.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if you could talk about that a little.
Well, that was a classic dilemma, which I think is probably the hardest, toughest problem of working parents, which is they can't be two places at once. And if their job insists that they're there and their kid is calling, what do they do? And sometimes there's just no solution, easy solution. And this was the chairman of Time, Inc. So you can picture her job, 9/11 morning, was to be there. And she had to send photographers and writers out and stick on the job, be there when they came back. And it was just the biggest day ever, ever. At the same time, her only child, a son, 17, was in a school in the shadow of the World Trade Center. And he did not take his BlackBerry to school that day, she said. There was no way of reaching him or reaching the school. And she couldn't get there. There was nothing she could do. And just looking at those images of those buildings falling down and wondering where your kid is. So I started interviewing her, of course. I didn't know anything about this. She started talking about this story. And so it was obviously haunting her that this was one of the worst moments of her life. But what could she do? It was just helplessness. So being there is pretty excruciating.
Yeah.
Requirement.
Well, that's an extreme situation, I think.
Well, the most extreme was what happened to the welfare mothers.
Yeah.
Who have to leave their children in a country with no child care available and rigid working hours. Sometimes those kids are in terrible danger, and they can't really do anything about it because they're going to get fired if they respond. So it's tough.
Well, you've talked about this, and I know you've talked about this in your previous books
That's
as
right.
well, that, you know, you say in this book that women, until women put a high value on their work, you know, outside the labor force, or in this case as a parent, we can't expect others to do so.
Yeah.
And how can we make that huge cultural shift? What can women do or parents do?
Well, there are a lot of things. And first of all, I think particularly women need to understand that they do have a lot of power and that they're not using it. They don't vote as many low-income or younger women don't vote at all. They're the lowest voting participation rate in the country. And they vote so little that the polling groups or the focus groups don't even ask what they want because they don't count. And you don't count if you don't vote. So in a pre-election season, that would be my biggest point. Understand that you do have power to influence things. I mean, 500 votes decided the state of Florida last time. So that's number one, understand your power. And number two, just realize that some of the dilemmas that you're struggling with are really, there are solutions out there that can be found in public life. You don't have to solve every problem by yourself. For instance, being there is a dilemma when you have very rigid working hours. So if we simply said we've got to have some changes, such as the ability to say no, the choice of no to mandatory overtime, for instance, which we don't have that right, when suddenly they say you've got to work nights or Saturdays, you can say, no, I have a child and I don't think that's right, but we need laws about that. But people need to learn that they can make demands that they're not asking for now. And it's an old saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Mm-hmm. We do have a call on line one from Urbana, so go ahead, caller.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I loved your story of the irrational no. I think that's just a marvelous thing and a way to command respect for oneself. Also, I'm looking forward to reading your book. I wonder if you would comment, please, on for a long time women were perceived as being weak, and if we were assertive, we were aggressive. Would you comment, please, on how politeness and civility have come to command respect for us?
Have come to command more respect?
In the workplace, yes.
I'm not sure if I'm aware of stereotypes on that, on politeness and so forth, but I will say the research I've seen does show that the stereotypical thinking about women has changed and that we really don't think of women anymore is weak or not so bright or all those things. I think we've really changed on that. There's been a lot of progress. But I think some of those stereotypes have shifted from women to mothers. So that if you tell people to think of the quickly mental image, what comes to mind when you say the word businesswomen, for instance? They will think sharp, efficient, rational, and all those things. Sometimes they also have some negative connections, but they certainly don't think slow or dumb, you know. But if you say mom or even mother, the associations are often soft, caring, maybe nice as you can be, and not so smart. So there are still stereotypes about mothers that I think need to be overcome.
Well, I'm really glad you've written this book because I think people need to realize that when you say mom, it also means juggling a whole lot of things.
Yeah, and it also, when you think about it, and you know, I'm sure, it means somebody, if you're doing a good job, you're tough as nails. You've got to be firm and say, no, you cannot go out tonight in that car, or you cannot ride around with no helmet, et cetera. You've got some pretty rules, firm rules that you have to really stand up for. So it takes a lot of guts. It takes a lot of character. It takes a strong will to be a good parent. And the mothers have that. So they are just as tough as it takes. And as you know, it's sometimes harder to go home than it is to go to the office.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Great program.
Thank you.
Thanks to that caller. And we have another caller on line two from Urbana. Go ahead.
That's me. Did you say that the president appeared in New York after 9/11 to show that we're there for you?
No, Rudy Giuliani, the mayor.
Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah.
Well.
Okay, and...
To what extent have the Republicans shored up the funding and supplies for first responders in case of a new attack?
Well, I think that's off the topic, but... I don't think we should get into politics on this one. Do you?
No, that's fine. And right now, actually, yeah. We do have some breaking news on the hostage situation. So Tom Rogers, our news director, is here to give us some information.
Thanks, Maeve. And we just received this, and we will have more on this coming up at the top of the hour from NPR News. An internet posting, according to the AP, says a second American hostage has now been killed in Iraq. The announcement came a day after a video was posted on a website showing the apparent beheading of an American civil engineer, Eugene Armstrong. The captors had said yesterday that they would kill another hostage in 24 hours. So another internet posting seems to suggest a second American hostage has been killed in Iraq. The group had taken two Americans and a Briton hostage recently and had threatened to kill the three. And we will follow the story, and NPR will have more on this coming up at 2 o'clock. Back to you, Maeve.
Okay, thanks. Sorry, Anne, I'm sorry I missed a little bit of that question from the last caller, so I apologize for that.
Yeah, I've got my own personal opinions, but I'm not sure that's what you want.
Okay.
show.
That's fine. But referring back to the first caller, when she was talking about, you know, the skills that mothers have, and I know in the book you kind of raise, how can you present that to a potential employer? What is this the right time to do it? And you have pretty good suggestions of how...
Yeah,
someone can do that.
Yeah, I wanted the book to be useful, and I did poll a number of women who were professional women who had pulled back and asked them, what do you think we're ready to hide it? We should still be hiding this, or should we be flaunting it? You know, so I have a chapter on that. And they basically, the majority said, I think we're not there yet to mm-hmm. put this on your resume. But I did, so I'm, you know, respecting that. I think in certain industries it's harder than others, such as IT industry or maybe financial services where things change rapidly, it's going to be tough. But I think in many, many, many other areas, it's an asset and that maybe we ought to think about how to use it. And so I did get some very encouraging stories of women who just said, here are the things I learned, and I learned a ton by raising my children. And one of them had been out of the job market 20 years. And she was pretty much getting a runaround in trying to get a job as a copy editor in this case. So she drew up what I call a parallel resume, listing all the various skills and basic approaches that she had learned that as a parent and a volunteer. And it was so clever and so, you know, intelligent and persistent. She got the job, and she's doing extremely well. So I put that thing she drew up is in the book, and I put a lot of ideas like that in the back of the book. If you're wondering how to put this on your resume.
No, that was very good. I think it's very helpful. And I know your last book, too, and it's come up quite a bit recently. For example, in Time magazine in March 2004, they discussed how highly educated professional women are opting out of their careers for several years. And, you know, maybe people, even if they are working, maybe working part-time or, you know, not as many hours or, you know, in jobs that maybe aren't
right
to their level. And how are women hurting themselves by doing this? And, you know, what can they do to get back in?
Well, of course, you're hurting yourself financially, mm-hmm. and you're creating dependency. You're becoming a dependent. If you can afford to do that, that implies someone else is paying the bills, and what happens if something happens to that marriage or to that person? So you're taking on a big dependency that we should hopefully have better working rules so that people can work more reasonable family-friendly hours. They don't have to completely leave their professions or their careers. But assuming you have to and that you do, you feel the pressures or you want to for a while, then I think one of the things I'm hoping this book can help do is give people more confidence so that they can go back in with a certain degree of self-confidence, certainly never apologize
right.
for having been a mom. And hopefully, I think when you feel that kind of power or confidence, you can persuade others. Certainly you can't persuade others if you haven't persuaded yourself. So the way to get at employers, first of all, I think is for us to have the confidence to tell them, you know, I know it seems unorthodox, but, you know, I really have had a magnificent experience doing this. And I think people are increasingly, you know, maybe susceptible to listening to that.
And as you said, the women that you had interviewed said perhaps now it's not the right time, you know, to use all that.
It's interesting because it's contradictory. The more
right.
the more powerful women all said, "Oh, put it on your resume," but most of them never did.
Yeah, well, because I
so
was going
to. But maybe that was earlier, whatever. But they hadn't done it, and the women who were out of the job market and thinking about going back in were afraid to do it. But not all of them. In fact, one of my favorite stories was a woman who was out 8 years. Her husband lost his job. Happens these days, and she really had to go back to work. And so she agonized, what should I do? So finally she put 4 years as a, you know, part-time consultant, like we all, many people do. And then 4 years she just bit the bullet and said full-time parent for those 4 years. So she sent this out to 30 places. Seven called her back for an interview, and she got four job offers. So, you know, what does that mean? She said, it worked, but I don't know how many didn't call me back because I'd been a full-time parent. But on the other hand, would I have wanted to work in those places?
Mm-hmm.
Answer, no. So, you know, it was a smart move, I think.
And
it's not clear-cut.
No, because many of those women, like you said, they did not mention their own, you know, parenting skills or involvement
yeah.
until they became quite powerful themselves.
And I'll tell you another paradox I've noticed, because when I was working on the book and people said, what's the name of your book? And I said, and the name became what I said all the time. I said, if you've raised kids, you can manage anything. And invariably people would laugh. And then they would pause and say, oh, it's so true. So if it's so true, why are we still laughing?
Yeah.
So I think there's still a kind of stigma or still a little bit of a not aware feeling yet. But hopefully that's going to change.
Well, let me introduce you one more time, Anne. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and we're talking with Anne Crittenden, author of You've Raised Kids, You Can Manage Anything. Join our conversation by calling 333-9455 or toll-free 800-222-9455. And I wondered if there were any of those stories or anecdotes that you particularly, I mean, you obviously liked a lot of them that you put in there, but is there any one that stood out more to you than any other?
Well, I'll tell you the one. You asked me about empathy. Of course, I remembered the story after you asked it. and we'll say the name of the book again, because if you've raised kids, you can manage anything. And this was a story from a woman who was one of the top people at the Bechtel Corporation in San Francisco. And she was a very busy, you know, working woman, didn't think anything much about family problems. And then she suddenly had twins. Mm. And suddenly she was very empathetic to all the women in the company, which she realized were out trying to pump milk during the day to go home to nursing children, because we have very short maternity leaves in America. So she wondered, where are they doing it? And she looked, they're doing it in the bathroom, in the broom closet, in the hallways. It was really a bad situation. So she sent a memo to the guy in charge of facilities and said, we need to make a place for people to express their breast milk.
And he emailed her back and said, let him do it in the bathroom. And she wrote him back and said, you do not want to go in writing saying something like that. Preparing food, breast milk is food. And you're saying they should prepare food in the bathroom? And in no time, she had a facility set up for the other mother.
But it's like you said, the squeaky wheel, right? She just
well,
had to ask
you know, him. Once we ask for things, things happen.
Right. And in terms of that, people are becoming a little bit more creative and playful, maybe, using techniques from raising children in terms of creativity and playfulness and bringing them into the workplace. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, those were stories I heard from people in the creative industries, particularly in television or like Jerry Laburn, who was one of the pioneers of children's television. And they just learned from their kids that these playful moments, or Jerry Laburn let people have a time out to play time in the afternoon every day in her office to just loosen up, you know, and take a little brief break and freshen up themselves. She also learned from her kids what was funny. She used her own children as focus groups before anybody had ever thought of asking children what shows they might want to watch. And one of the top women in television today said what her four-year-old, she asked her four-year-old, this is ahead of a cable channel, she asked him what his favorite shows were. And she said it was a very good surrogate for shows that had a lot of high energy, where people seem to be having fun and all of that. So these playful things, we don't lose our taste for them even when we're grown up, you know.
Right, and particularly in the creative industry, like you said, that they can be very helpful for people mm-hmm. to loosen up and
take the pressure off.
Yeah. That's right. And, you know, the top story that's been going around on the Internet for a while is the one that you share in here, too, about the difference between mom and dad brains, how the mother is doing everything.
Maybe that does go back to these prehistoric differences.
And the mother does everything around the house, and then the father just gets up and goes to bed, and everything's fine.
Yeah,
but
multitasking.
That, multitasking, yeah, going back to that again.
Yeah.
So I wondered if you could talk a little bit, though, about the father. You know, we have been talking a lot about mothers, and I think we did mention a little bit at the beginning about fathers.
Yeah, and I should say, you talk about these stories. One of my very favorite stories came from a father, actually, who was a diplomat, a career diplomat, and he was the man who had negotiated, the chief negotiator for the 1979 peace agreement between U.S. and Israel, Egypt and Israel. And he had been widowed when his children were 7 and 9. His wife had died. And he was their only parent all the rest of the years they were growing up. And he really had to help. You know, he was the parent, and mm-hmm. he said he could not have negotiated that peace agreement without that experience, because he had had to deal with grief and loss and fear and all the emotional repercussions that those children had felt, and all these same emotions are the ones roiling the Middle East. And it just gave me goosebumps to hear him talk about it, because if he hadn't been that much of a hands-on parent, he said he couldn't have done that deal. So that tells you something about the power of this experience, I think.
And I just want to go back too to the power that you said that women have too in the marketplace, that they are in every profession and the heads of many big organizations like the National Science Foundation, and that they are changing the language and the atmosphere of workforce.
Yeah, that's a good point, and it was also an encouraging point, because I did find, somewhat to my surprise, because there's been a lot of publicity to the fact that, you know, if you really want to get ahead, you can't have children and all that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a woman, it just doesn't seem to be true. There, I found many, many top people or women have children, and in fact, the most successful women, measured by education or income or position and income, have children just as often as people in very much more ordinary jobs. So that seems to be a bit of an urban myth that you can't be a mother and successful. And what these mothers told me, these top-ranking businesswomen and others, were that they felt things are changing. For instance, you can talk about your children now much more than you used to. And several of them said it was actually a bonding thing with the guys. They could talk about their kids. They had that in common. They might not be able to talk about football, but they can talk about their kids. And they're changing the language in companies somewhat. They're using metaphors based on children's books or children's stories or children's experience. And in fact, in one show I did, someone called in with a wonderful story like that, saying they, in her organization, they'd had a very difficult client, and they thought maybe she was asking for the world, and they didn't know how to deal with it. And she suddenly remembered a fairy tale she'd read to her kids, which was about a princess who wanted the moon. And she wanted the moon and demanded the moon, and then they finally said, well, what does the moon look like? What do you think the moon is like? And she said, well, it's silver and shiny, and it fits on my finger. So they got her a shiny silver ring, and she was very happy. So remembering that, this woman said, let's ask this person, this client, what she really wants. So they asked her, and it was not at all as much as they thought she was asking for, and they solved the problem. And when she told everybody she'd gotten this solution from a children's story, fairy tale, again, they laughed, but then they realized, you know, this has a lot of insight. So things, I think, we're getting, mothers are changing the language of the workplace little by little.
Yeah, I was surprised looking through. You have the biographies of all the women and men that you interviewed for this book, and I kind of glanced through that. And, you know, I saw a majority of them had maybe two, three kids. And I'm the mother of four kids, and I was pleasantly surprised to see there were some with three or more kids. So
I know. It's amazing. One of my best interviews was with a Mormon professor, full professor, noted author, six kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, and some of the, you know, federal judge with five kids, et cetera, et cetera. Sandra Day O'Connor has three. You know, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Not typical, I must say. Then some of them were older, but, you know, four kids is not off the charts, I assure you. Although you must be very busy.
Yeah. Multitasking is, yeah, that is key, I think, to a lot. But I really like to thank you for coming, Ann. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and my guest has been Ann Crittenden, author of If You've Raised Kids, You Can Manage Anything, published by Gotham Books. Ann, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was great fun.
And I have to admit to you, this is, you know, I've been multitasking here, and your book gave me courage to do this interview. This isn't my ordinary job, but the title is If You've Raised Kids, You Can Manage Anything. I thought, I can manage this interview. So
good,
thank you very
you.
Much for your patience in dealing with me.
It was fun. Thank you.
Okay. I'm Maeve Riley. Henry Frayne is our engineer, and Harriet Williamson is our executive producer. Joining us now is Todd Gleason. He has today's settlement prices from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Thank you very much, Maeve. From the Chicago Board of Trade on this afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby wheat contract was up 6 cents, as all of the wheat contracts were higher for the day at the Board of Trade. December contract, 336¾, the high. The low there at 327¼, and a settlement price at 334¾. Once again, that December contract finishing the day 6 higher. March contract, 346½, the high. The low at 338¼, and a settlement price at 345¼, and they were up 5¼ for the day. And the May wheat, 350, the high. The low at 344. A settlement price at 348¾, up 4¼. July futures, 352½, the high. The low at 345. A settlement price at 350½, up a nickel for the day. And September futures, 356, the high. The low at 355. A settlement price today at 355, and they finished 4 cents higher for the day. Coming up during the closing market report at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock this afternoon, we'll talk with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, about all that's happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange on this trading day, a Tuesday afternoon here in the mid part of September. Also, we'll take a look at what happened with the crop production reports from yesterday, crop progress reports, that is, rather, from yesterday, with the state statisticians from Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa. That all coming up this afternoon during the closing market report. Just a reminder, it is National Farm Safety and Health Week. If you have the opportunity while you're out in the midst of harvest season and you've been working hard or are just about ready to get started, make sure you do some things that can protect yourself. We'll hear today about wearing earplugs around very, very loud equipment. Also, don't forget to take a little nap in the afternoon if you get the opportunity. Take about 15 minutes. That'll keep you from ending up maybe with some problems later on where you get a little tired and you just might make a mistake on one of those big pieces of machinery. So do that for me as well. You're listening to The Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana, a broadcasting service of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Let's take a look again at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade. We'll go through the wheat numbers one more time. December futures were down, or rather up 6. The March contract up 5¼. The May up 4¼. And the July up 5 cents. September futures were up 4 for the day. Now, from the corn pit, The December contract there had a high of 214, a low of 212 and a quarter. They settled at 212 and three quarters, were unchanged on the day. And the March futures, a 224 high, a low at 222 and a quarter. Settlement price at 222 and three quarters. They finished the day unchanged, too. May futures, 230 and a half high, low at 229. A settlement price at 229 and a quarter, down a quarter of a cent for the day. And July futures into Corn Pit down a quarter. Had a high today of 235 and three quarters, rather. A low at 234 and a half, settled once again at 234 and three quarters, down a quarter of a cent in the July corn. September futures were up one quarter. A high today of 241 and three quarters, low at 240 and a quarter, settled at that low at 240 and a quarter. That was a penny, or rather a quarter of a cent higher for the day. December futures for next year now, 247 and a half, the high for the day, the low at 246 and a half, and they settled at 247. They were up a quarter of a cent on the day. December oat futures for the day, 171 was the high, the low at 163 and three quarters. Settlement price at 170 rather and a half, up 6.5 cents. And the March oats, 175 the high, low at 168 and a quarter. Settlement price there at 174 and a quarter, up 5 1/4 for the day. From the soy complex, nearby November beans, 546 the high and a half, the high, the low at 541 and a half. A settlement price at 542 and one quarter. They were down a penny and a half for the day. January beans for the day, 554 the high, the low at 548 and three quarters, and a settlement price at 549 and a half, and they were down 1 1/4 at the end of the day. The March contract for the bean pit, 560 and a half the high, the low at 556 and a half, settled 557 and a quarter, and they were off a penny and a half. And the May futures, 568 high, low at 563 and a half, settled 564 and a quarter, and they were down 3/4 for the afternoon. July futures, 573 and a half the high, the low at 569 and a half, settled 570 and a half, down a half cent. In the November beans, 568 and a half the high, the low at 565, settled 566, down 2. October bean meal, 162 the high, the low at 159.50, a settlement price at 159.90, down 190, and the December contract, 163.50 high, low at 161.40, settled at 162.30, down 110 for the day. October bean oil now, 22.15 the high, the low at 21.65, a settlement price at 21.87. They were up a dime, and the December oil up 9 cents today, $22 even the high, the low at 21.45, settled at 21.71. Once again, that contract finished 9 cents higher. Just recapping what happened at the Board of Trade very quickly. Wheat futures were up anywhere between 4 and 6 cents. Corn futures were unchanged to a quarter lower and a quarter higher. And December oats were up 6.5 cents for the day. The soybeans finished the day about a penny and a half lower. Now, here with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange, Jay Pierce.
And thank you very much, Todd. The high price today for September feeder cattle, 115 even. The low is 114.60. Settlement at 114.70, down 50. October feeder cattle, high today 112.65, the low 112.10, and 112.52 and a half was the settlement, down 27 and a half. November, the high today 111.80, the low 111.25, settlement 111.40, down 60. Onto the live cattle for October, the high today 85.92 and a half, the low was 85.40, settlement 85.65, down 35. And the December live cattle, high today 88.70, the low was 88.17 and a half, and the settlement 88.37 and a half, down 30. Lean hogs for October, the high 74.75, the low 73.82 and a half, and the settlement 74.45. Those were up 65. December lean hogs, the high 70 even, the low 69.05, settlement 69.57 and a half, down 12 and a half. February lean hogs, the high 68.30, the low 67.50, 68.05 was the settlement, down 30. And the lean hogs for April, 65.90, the high today 65.10, the low 65.87 and a half was the settlement, that was unchanged on the close. And the frozen pork bellies for February, high today 101.75, the low was at 100.20, and the settlement was at 101.22 and a half, and that also was unchanged on the close.
Well, thanks for wrapping up those numbers from the Mercantile Exchange. Jay Pierce in with us this afternoon. Let's take a look at some of the outside markets for the day. Crude oil now at $47.05 a barrel, or up 65 cents. CRB index at 277.67. That's up 370 at this hour. U.S. dollar is trading at 88.08, down 88. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at $10,240, or 10,240, that is up 35 for the day. The S&P at 1129 is up 6, and the NASDAQ at 1437 is up 12.
Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting musical artists Nancy Wilson and Ramsey Lewis, Ravi Shankar, Laurie Anderson, and Nathan Gunn in the coming weeks. For more information, contact the Krannert Center ticket office at 217-333-6280 or visit KrannertCenter.com.
American Indians get a museum on the National Mall.
We have a highly organic and curvilinear building, almost as though it were a huge block of stone that sat here since time immemorial and ended up being carved by wind and water rather than being built by man and dropped down on this spot.
Today's opening of the Museum of the American Indian in Washington, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 WILL Urbana.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Ed Toshak from Naples, North Carolina wants to know, Dear Dr. Science, I've heard the speed of light referred to as the universal speed limit. If this is true, who enforces it?
The laws of nature are much more than suggestions. Break one and you'll find out just how rigorously they're enforced. I once invented a self-cleaning toaster that doubled as a coffee grinder with a feedback loop that allowed the energy consumed by the toaster to be provided by liberated caffeine molecules. Well, sir, imagine my surprise when six uniformed members of the Perpetual Motion Police materialized in my kitchen and confiscated the whole apparatus. Breaking the sound or light barrier without prior authorization just isn't worth it. Do the crime, you do the time.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by Doc's Breath and distributed by PRI, Dr. Science's new CD, Get Smart, is now available via mail and includes a Dr. Science screensaver for PC computers. For information, call 800-989-3825.
You're listening to Today's programming is made possible. You're listening to WILL Radio, a broadcasting service at the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm the host of the Closing Market Report, which comes up at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock this afternoon. Please stay with us. This afternoon, we'll talk with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, about what happened to the Mercantile Exchange and the Board of Trade. We'll check in on some of the latest safety tips, as it is National Farm Health and Safety Week here in the United States all week long. We'll be taking a look at what's happening in the world of farm safety and health. Here's the extended forecast for the two-state region Thursday of this week in west central Illinois. Sunny skies early, then becoming partly sunny during the afternoon. Elsewhere, to be mostly sunny. Friday, a mix of clouds and sunshine, some scattered showers and a few thunderstorms possible, mainly in the north and central sections of Illinois.